Emma Kent.
And I'm Derek Russell, and this is The Memo,
a podcast of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and djournal.com. Good Wednesday afternoon, North Mississippi. This is The Memo on November 15th, 2017. I'm here with Derek Russell.
I was verifying that date. It didn't sound right, but you are correct.
I know. It's the 15th.
The month is halfway over.
I know. Time.
Which is a cliche thing to say on the 15th of a month, but it's true, and it's weird. It just seems like it was Halloween. It just seems like it was Halloween 2 weeks ago.
Because it was.
Yeah, that was the joke. Thank you. Yeah.
Time flies when you're skipping Thanksgiving and headed straight for Christmas.
Yeah. We don't do Thanksgiving. Nobody does Thanksgiving.
Neither does your shirt, as it is red and green.
That's just what I grabbed. No, I love Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's actually my second favorite holiday.
Behind, I forgot.
Halloween.
Halloween.
Like we did this already.
Okay, okay, yeah. Sorry, everyone.
No, you're good. I had deja vu there for a minute.
Derek, how was your trip?
Oh, it was good.
Good?
Had a good time, yeah.
Did you do anything fun?
I saw some shows.
What did you see?
I saw Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, was it good?
It was good.
I really want to see that one.
Waitress. I saw Book of Mormon.
Have you seen Book of Mormon before?
Yeah. I saw Meteor Shower, which was Steve Martin's new play, and Amy Schumer and Keegan-Michael Key were in that. And The Play That Goes Wrong. I think that was all I saw.
Well, that's quite a lineup.
Yeah.
It's good.
Gosh. Well, I've heard Waitress is really good, too.
Waitress is good. I had not gotten to see it before. I was excited to see Dear Evan Hansen after it winning all the Tonys.
Is, what's his name still in it?
Ben Platt. This is his last week. I think the 19th is his last day. So, yeah.
I like him.
Good.
Cool.
Good performances all around.
Cool. Well, glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
Just in time for the Journal Thanksgiving luncheon tomorrow.
We'll give you a full rundown on that on Friday's show.
A review.
We should, set up a booth and, like ESPN commentate the whole thing.
That would be so
like
good.
Dodgeball.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they brought the sweet potatoes. That's a fail.
That's a big fail.
I'm literally bringing sweet potatoes.
Oh,
tomorrow.
Emma brought the sweet potatoes, and I'm sorry. It was a swing and a miss.
What's wrong with
she
the sweet potatoes?
She did not put the marshmallows on top. I repeat, she did not put the marshmallows on top.
No, I always do the marshmallows.
Okay, good. Last minute save. Hail Mary pass from Emma. She did put the marshmallows on top.
It's important.
Jim is going in for another piece of turkey.
Yeah, yeah.
Bold move.
Yeah. I see Brad is in line with two plates.
Taking some home for the 18 kids.
Aw.
He's going to make them share one plate, though.
Aw.
We miss you, Brad.
It's like he's dead. There's an in memoriam right there.
No, he's alive. He's here. Well, I don't know if he's here right now physically, but in spirit,
hearts,
he is here.
He's here.
Yeah. In our hearts forever. Okay. So we got a good show today, and we're going to talk about lots of stuff.
Uh-huh.
News.
Could you vague that up for me at all?
News, sports,
news.
Weather.
I'm not talking sports today. I don't think we're doing weather either.
We can do whatever we want.
Oh, okay. Then yes, news, sports, weather.
News, sports, weather, and more.
Yeah.
No, we're talking about news. So let's get to it.
All right. Bobby Harrison joining us now on this Wednesday to discuss two new state museums that are opening in the state of Mississippi. Bobby, $90 million spent on this facility of these adjoining museums is a lot of money. What are we planning to see with this facility?
Well, you got the Museum of Mississippi History, I think is the official title, the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum. As you said, they're adjoining in the same building, but two distinct museums. The building itself is very impressive. The museums are full of artifacts and exhibits that tell the story of Mississippi from prehistoric times to modern times. I think these, you're right, $90 million is a lot of money, but I think these are museums that will last a long time and be a, great benefit and pride to all of Mississippi. You know, the Department of Archives and History and the museum's employees are making great efforts to ensure these museums, not, you know, just Jackson museums, but museums that represent the whole state. And they've involved the communities throughout the state, different communities and different groups of people to try to accomplish that goal.
Now, you said, of course, not showing off just Jackson, but all regions throughout the state. Obviously, Northeast Mississippi is highly recognized in the facilities. You've toured the facility, have you not?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to get to go twice, back around Labor Day, and then last week I got to go again. And I mean, I'm a Mississippian, and I'm a sort of a history buff. So I'm very excited about these museums, and I think all Mississippians should make an effort to tour them in the next several months. They're going to open on the 9th, I think, as you said, which is a Saturday. And they're going to be free tours that day, but and on Sunday too. But those spots are already sold out, and not sold out, but already been scooped up. There's been so much interest, so they open for regular business that Tuesday after the 9th, so people can start going to see them then.
What are some of the highlights you saw when walking through?
Well, I kind of like to describe the Museum of Mississippi History as sort of, you know, it just tells a story from prehistoric times to modern times. You know, it's just a chock full of artifacts that tell that story. It has, you know, it has exhibits and replicas also to tell the story. Like, you know, it has, I was just as a, you know, Northeast Mississippian, it had, you know, it has a replica of the swinging bridge at located at Tishomingo State Park under construction as it was being built in the 1930s by the Civilian Conservation Corps as part of the, you know, the work programs during the Great Depression to try to get people jobs. You know, that's a bridge that, you know, I know that I've always been, you know, kind of intrigued by that bridge and at Tishomingo State Park. And, you know, there'll be an exhibit there and somebody from, say, Baton Rouge, Louisiana is touring the museums and they see that exhibit, they can read a plaque and say, you can drive up to Tishomingo State Park and see the real bridge. So, you know, it kind of connects, you know, the exhibits try to connect the visits to the museum to the rest of the state. So I think that's a good thing. You know, you got Jim High, Tupelo, a resident businessman in Tupelo, you know, talking about the 1936 tornado that we all heard about all our lives, still one of the deadliest tornadoes in the history of the nation, you know, the 36 tornado in Tupelo. You got, you know, Ellis Presley, William Faulkner, but then the Chickasaw Indians, which was so prominent in Northeast Mississippi, and then the Civil Rights Museum. It has less artifacts, but it has exhibits and replicas that sort of just tell a narrative story of the Civil Rights Movement in the state, dealing with, you know, you can see, you know, a replica of the Lyceum in Ole Miss as it talks about the immigration of Ole Miss in the early 60s, and you have a lot of pictures of all the people, the photo mugshots of all the, on the wall of all the people who were arrested and, you know, as part of the Civil Rights Movement in the state. And a moving part to me was, you know, you have the names of all the people who were lynched throughout the history of the state. So, you know, it tells the good and the bad, which is, you know, what museums should do.
Right. I saw that picture with all the lynchings. That's a powerful column there in the middle of the museum. It's a very detailed place, just judging from the photos. And I think a lot of people will be excited to see it when it does open on December 9th, as you said, as a part of the bicentennial celebration. Where is it located in Jackson?
It's on the eastern part of town, sort of overlooking the fairgrounds. I like to say the periphery of the downtown. It's on the eastern sort of edge of downtown. I think it add a lot to the Jackson area. I know it's Jackson, but it's, you know, it's important that we, you know, that our capital city thrives. You know, that's important for the entire state. So I think, you know, I think it'd be a boost not only to it'll be a boost to Jackson, but I think it'd be a boost to the entire state. There, you know, and one thing real quick on the, you know, we've been talking about what's in the museum, but the building itself is an impressive building, and as part of it was something I hadn't seen yet because it was under construction last time I was there. In the middle of the Civil Rights Museum is going to be this big sculpture, and it plays just a little light of mine and sort of lights up as people get close to it, and it's going to be sort of like in the center of the room and going up to a skylight on the top of the building. So it's going to be an impressive sort of architectural thing that I think, you know, for, you know, add something else to the experience of visiting the museums.
Well, Bobby, thanks for coming on today with this information.
All right. I appreciate it.
Derek, remember when I said we were going to talk about sports?
I did.
Well, we're about to talk about sports.
All right.
Because we have two sports podcasts here at the Daily Journal. Did you know?
I did.
They're pretty cool. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with Brad Locke and Dalton Middleton. New episodes air every Wednesday, and you can listen to it for free in iTunes, podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans can check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode every Thursday afternoon in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and the Rebels. Listen to it for free in iTunes, on podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
You can also listen to the Daily Journal's new... Did you know we had a true crime podcast, Emma?
I think I've heard of it.
Okay. Reporter Emma Kent... Wait a minute. That's you.
You're right. I have heard of it.
Open the case of Leochi, where you take a fresh look at the unsolved disappearance of a 13-year-old Tupelo girl from 25 years ago. The 6-episode investigative serial podcast is now available in iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and a variety of other podcast apps. Or you can just call Emma on the phone at 912, and she'll do the whole show for you. I was trying to think of Georgia area code.
It's definitely not 912.
Okay. That's Southern Georgia.
I don't have a Georgia area code anymore.
Oh, okay. At 662, whatever her phone number is, and she can just tell you the whole show. Or you can stream it from our website at djournal.com/openpodcast.
Yes, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays, if you call me, I will verbatim read the entire podcast to
you.
It's pretty good. It's just a special feature.
It's 99 cents for the first minute and $4 for each additional minute.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, now we've got the Monroe Journal's Ray Van Dusen and Emily Paul to talk about their story from last week's Monroe Journal, and it also ran in the Daily Journal, about former JonBenet Ramsey suspect, John Mark Carr, as he was formerly known, and now is known as Alex Reich. And so she has now moved to Monroe County and is living in Aberdeen, and you guys sat down and sort of got the whole story and talked with her for a while. So tell us a little bit about that experience and a little bit of background information, how you found out about this, that she was there and sort of her background.
Yeah, it was definitely the story of a lifetime. Actually, it was Halloween night. I had someone call me anonymously and basically told me that this person had told trapped somebody and told them the true identity of who she really was. And 48 hours later, after a little bit of investigative journalism and just kind of doing some research, we were sitting in this person's house doing a 2-hour interview with the chief of police. So, I mean, it was definitely the story of a lifetime for sure.
So let's back up a little bit. Can you kind of run us through, Alex was formerly identified as a man and went by John Mark Carr and was involved in the JonBenet Ramsey murder case as a suspect. Can you kind of walk us through that background so people sort of know the background there?
Or it's believed he confessed at one point to the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. Upon, I guess, investigation from the district attorney during that trial, they determined that he was lying. She maintains to this day that she was there when JonBenet Ramsey was murdered and will only offer another statement that just says her death was an accident. So I think originally what was determined about this person is that he was just basically vying for attention. As far as his identity today, the way it was explained to us by him was that he was born a man, went through a castration process to make himself a more moral individual, and then went through an actual sex change to become anatomically female and changed his name to Alexis Reich. Now, today, he dresses like a male again. He said that the sex change went horribly and that he could not pass as female. So these days, goes by Alex Reich.
So, in 2006, he was arrested, right, when he was living abroad, and then all of this happened, and he was cleared. So now he's looking for a new life, a fresh start in Aberdeen. He's bought a historic home. What was, you know, the impression that you got? I know in the story, you know, he's looking for acceptance from the people of Aberdeen. You know, what did you think about sort of that, his ideas about starting fresh and wanting to settle down and have a new life?
I think that he's so used to this because he's lived outside of the country since 2008, and he or she was saying that, you know, during living in Atlanta, following the arrest in Bangkok, I mean, there wasn't a really good reception there, and she actually came back to the States in February and has been living with family in Hamilton, Alabama. And, I mean, whenever she moved to town, she pretty well lived under the radar for 2 months, and nobody had any clue about who this person really was. So, I mean, basically how this all got started, you know, after I told you that somebody had called me on Halloween night, right after that, the rumor mill was really starting to grow. So I think this was just Alex's attempt to hit that rumor mill dead on. And, I mean, she said that pretty well people are going to be unacceptable of her. And basically just talking to people in the community, I've gotten mixed reactions. A lot of people are really iffy about this person, just given the background. But then other people are like, well, you know, if she's never been convicted of anything, she's got to live somewhere. So, I mean, what the future holds, I don't know. I mean, I was told that she's still coming out in public to different events. I mean, the story definitely shines light on Alex Wright, and everybody is aware that she is living in Aberdeen. So what happens from here, I don't know. And this is definitely something, as far as the stories that we've done at the Monroe Journal, I can think of no other that compares to this as far as public interest goes. I mean, so many people in the community are talking about this story.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I know it's been very well read on y'all's website and on our website as well. So people are definitely interested. Well, okay. Well, thank y'all for kind of taking us a little bit behind the scenes and talking to us about it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Thanks. Watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast every Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. Watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. or catch the replay later in the day.
You can also wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a five-minute video. Shows are posted each weekday at 7 a.m. at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, and the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Adam Robson on today to discuss his In Focus from this past Monday's paper. How are you, sir?
Doing just fine.
You shot a little pool? You shot somebody shooting a little pool?
Yep.
All right. Thanks for coming on today. We appreciate
no problem.
You.
All right. We'll
Sharpshooters, which has been a long-standing business here in Tupelo for as far back as I can remember. I remember there when I was a kid, so.
You've been here longer than I have, so, you know, it predates me, I know.
Tell me about this individual.
Well, I stepped into Sharpshooters a few weeks ago, talked with Dot, the owner. She recommended Wendy. I could have taken this in a lot of different angles. You know, I could have just shown up one night and gotten everybody playing pool. Maybe that's something down the road later I'll do. But I don't know.
Find a grifter, do the whole sting
you know,
operation.
Little Eddie Felsen action
there
going.
You go.
But I don't know, maybe this is this weirdness that I've got, but being a child of the 80s and growing up with MTV, I always, when I think of pool, I go back to the George Thorogood video of Bad to the Bone when he beats Bo Diddley in a match of pool, and all the kids in the neighborhood are just completely thrilled that George Thorogood whooped Bo Diddley.
Let me explain something real quick. MTV back in the day used to show music videos, Emma, before
it was their
original programming.
I have no response.
Okay.
I'm tired of being harassed.
I'm not harassing you. I'm just trying to be informative.
Speaking truths.
Yes.
But anyhow, she hooked me up with Wendy. She also helps organize in a lot of fundraisers that they have at Sharpshooters. And I'm telling you, the range of things that they do for people on the fundraiser end is, I mean, it's from one end of the stick to the other. So they do a lot. They have a lot of tournaments. I think their league is on Tuesday nights. I may be wrong, but you just got a lot of color going on. But I guess one of the problems that I ran into, all your light is concentrated in one area. So if the pool player steps back a foot from that table,
yeah,
I mean, you have like such a huge drop in stops from your light difference. So. But, I could have set up some lights, but I didn't. And, I needed to shoot something really quick, too. I'm not going to lie. You know, with everything going on in life right now, I had to fill a space really quick. I wanted to do this, and Wendy stepped up to the plate, and we knocked it out. I would love to have had some more photos in there, but, I it just didn't work out.
Right.
I had a lot of other things that were really cool. One, of course, it's after it runs. I was like, oh, I forgot about that one shot. I wish it had gone in there, but it just didn't.
Is she herself a longtime player?
She said she'd been playing since she was in high school. Didn't ask her age, so she's probably been playing. Well, I know she's been playing 20 years in leagues, so she's probably a 25 to 30 year player. But she said she moved here from Pennsylvania, didn't really know a lot of people, but, she knew she could play pool and came up and sort of a family out there at Sharpshooters.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on today and sharing.
All right. Good deal.
Now we have Christina Carey on here to talk about her story from last Friday's Daily Journal, about the Talbot House and its new bakery endeavor. So you went to check out sort of opening of their bakery, and the Talbot House is a sober living facility for women. So tell us a little bit about the bakery and sort of how they got it started.
Well, the sober living house is actually in another part of town. The bakery is at the Life Corps Administration Building. Behind the building, there's a green door, so you kind of have to go around. And they're leasing the commercial kitchen space from Life Corps in the former McDougall Center. And just to kind of give you a description, I mean, basically, I went there for the food. cinnamon rolls had the most amazing hint of coffee, the chocolate pudding, the chocolate cobbler. It had like a salty finish to it. And they have so many ideas for stuff they want to get into next year. Caramel pecan, sausage and cream cheese. They want to expand to making bread loaves as well sometime next year. So it really, from April of this year to, this when it opened, it's been a rapid succession of events that led to the bakery opening very quickly.
Yeah, reading your story made me really hungry because everything sounded really good. It sounds like the cinnamon rolls are a specialty item, I guess, of theirs. So the project was funded by two grants and then some funding from some board members, a grant from the Family Resource Center and then from Shepherd's Hands, which helped to cover the cost of a new industrial oven. So are they, as they try to expand and sort of as this grows, are they going to be looking for more funding, more grants, or what's sort of their plan moving forward?
Well, Becky Weatherford from Sober Living Talbot House mentioned that she would like to have a storefront. They don't really have like a place to do orders. So you walk in and there's the kitchen space right there. They would like to put up a table and maybe a real storefront. Of course, they're accepting any kind of grants they can get to expand for materials, for, just to kind of maybe online. She had a couple of ideas that she didn't really, want to talk too much about because she's so excited to even be able to have the bakery open. But they are very interested in expansion and further grants.
Awesome. And so the women who are at Talbot House, they sort of help with the bakery and work and bake and gives them sort of something to do. How does that work? How does it all work together?
Well, right now, Becky has only trained one baker, and that's Amanda Robertson. She's the head baker currently. They spent about 2 weeks training her to make the few basic recipes that they have for now. Blueberry, lemon curd, cinnamon rolls, and chocolate cobbler. I think there might be one more. So the hope is to keep train more of the girls, to give them something to do, to give them job training skills, because some of them may have records, some of them may have, drug courts, they may have addictions that they're struggling with. And so having something to put on their resume, having to, shown that they're giving back, the hope is to give them a hand up in that way.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like a great new thing, great new program, and sounds like it's also got, they have some delicious.
Really delicious.
Yeah, delicious recipes. I'm going to have to go check it out and pick up some of those cinnamon rolls. So thanks, Christina, for telling us about it.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this Thursday. We had a lot to discuss, but I thought it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, I want to talk a little more about sports.
You want to talk about Mississippi State losing on?
I went to that sports game.
Yeah, you went to that sports game.
And it was a really good one.
Go sports team.
It was a good sports game.
Score a point.
I got a good hot dog.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And
it was good until those last, 9 minutes or.
Even though we lost, I still felt pretty good about it.
Because of the hot dog?
Well, that and because I really thought they were just going to kill us and I was going to want to leave at halftime.
Yeah.
So,
but you didn't.
No, I stayed till the end.
Too.
So that concludes today's sports talk.
All right, good job. We'll be back on Friday with a new episode. Jenna Parsons joining us to discuss food. Scott Morris will talk about Murder on the Orient Express, which he saw last week. And I'll talk you through Scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a comment as far as movies go.
All right.
So that movie Lady Bird.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been hearing about it, right?
And yeah, that won't come here.
Well, I figured. Yeah. But so I've been hearing about it, and I hadn't seen the trailer. I really didn't know anything about it. I just had heard the name of the movie. And so I finally Googled it the other night to see what everybody was talking about. And I was really disappointed to find out that it is not like a movie about LBJ's wife.
No, that's what I thought it was.
I thought it was going to be like a history like drama, and I was really pumped because that's like my like favorite type of movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's like an indie... It's an indie film.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's still really good. I'll still see it, and I'm sure I'll still love it, but I was disappointed.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Although, I think I did see that it was coming here.
Is it?
Maybe.
I don't know.
We'll find out. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
I went to see Murder on the Orient Express at Times Square in New York, and they gave me a ticket for Lady Bird. And I was like, no, that's not what I bought a ticket for.
So, what did you do?
Went back to the counter and said I would like a ticket for Murder.
You broke the window.
Excuse me. Yeah.
So. All right. Well, we'll talk more about movies tomorrow.
Or on Friday, maybe.
On Friday. That's what I meant.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you then.
Cool.